football on Off The Ball.
So when you look at Kerry Football Club now and where we are, these are things that we've battled through for many, many years. These are obstacles that we've been willing to jump and willing to fight on through.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Arthur TV is the online alias of YouTube content creator Arthur Frederick, who has accumulated millions of views for his commentary, reaction videos and gaming content, particularly his True Crime and Just Chatting videos. Well, it's a true crime that the whole world don't see this version of Arthur Just Chatting, because he's revolutionising the production world. It's Arthur O'D.
It's so grandiose.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Arthur TV, millions of views this guy has.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not familiar with his work.
You could have also had famous Arthurs this morning, but I said, for the kids, we'll make it relatable with this online persona in person with us to my right. I hope you're well on this Friday. You have the Friday feeling and you're a Ryder Cup boy.
Yeah, a bit. I'm not dying for it, but I don't mind it.
Well, we're all dying to hear from the guy to my left here. See if you can guess who this is, based on this song that one of his club's fans created for him. Keith Tracy, Keith Tracy, running down the wing. Keith Tracy, Keith Tracy, hear United sing. Loved by the Reds, hated by the Blues. Keith Tracy, Keith Tracy, Keith Tracy. It is, in fact, Keith Tracy. Good morning.
I've never heard that song.
Well, I thought that might be the case. It was Sheffield United supporters submitted this song as an option to sing, and it was created by Craddy _ Crabby on fanchance.co.uk. And there were 37 chants in total created that season by Sheffield United, and you could have bought them in all one easy download for £3.49. So you are the subject of a song on an album.
You don't waste your evenings, do you?
I don't know the tune of the song, so I couldn't do it justice, so I had to say the lyrics, but I would have loved to have serenaded you with it completely, but yeah. I couldn't.
It was very different when I went back to Sheffield, you know, as a Sheffield Wednesday player.
Well, it says here you hated the Blues.
I said they hated him.
hated by the Blues.
Hated by the Blues, yeah. Then the Blues started to like me, then the Reds hated me. Yeah. Generally happened everywhere I went.
What's your preference now that you're retired with Sheffield?
It's probably a little bit of recency bias. I really did enjoy my time at Sheffield United. There was so much I liked about the club. Gary Speed being an obvious one that I just absolutely loved, that man. There were so many good players in the team. But when I went to Sheffield Wednesday, I was, you know, I wasn't playing for Burnley. I was in the reserves. Me and Eddie Howe had fallen out. And when Dave Jones rang me and asked me to come in for the last month, I didn't think I'd play. I was overweight. I'd hit the drink really, really hard. But Dave Jones just said, look, if your left foot works, we'll take you, son. And I went from feeling absolutely useless to feeling like I belonged back in football, and Sheffield Wednesday gave that to me. And yeah, even in League One, 38,000 fans every home game. So I really, really loved my time at Sheffield Wednesday, but they're in dire straits at the minute. It's horrible to see them like that.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. It is Ryder Cup Day, of course. Mm-hmm. So last night the foursomes were named for the morning tee-off. New York time, so these will be about 10 past 12 this afternoon, early lunchtime. This all gets going, 2025 Ryder Cup. Probably the biggest news overnight is there's no Shane Lowry in the foursomes, but you might see him in the four ball later. So at 12:10 p.m. Irish time, first out is Bryson DeChambeau and Justin Thomas, and they'll face John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton of Europe. Then you have Scotty Scheffler and Russell Henley partnering to play Ludwig Eber and Matt Fitzpatrick. That's at 12:26, 12:42, Colin Morikawa and Harris English will face Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood. There was a hope there that Lowry and McIlroy are partnering each other, but that's a pretty strong dynamic in itself. McIlroy and Fleetwood.
Harris English.
I've never heard that man's name.
I've just finished this now. 12:58 p.m. Last out in the morning session is Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantley, of course, who's going to donate all of his $500,000 to charity. They will both face Robert McIntyre and Victor Hovland. So that's who we have out. So, Harris English, you want to focus on there?
I've just never heard of the man. Never heard of the man's name in my life.
There you go, he's out. He got picked.
You'd think you'd have some name recognition for one of the top 12 golfers from America.
Yeah, he got picked. So, there's some big enough names being left out On paper so far.
Is that just the fee? They're getting the Americans half a million each.
Yeah, I get to that now for you just in a second. So Shane Lowry and Justin Rose left out, but they'll play again, I'm sure. Yeah, half a million. So it's, the narrative here could be good versus evil, you know. Europe not taking anything. They're doing it for the pride. Captain Luke Donald made sure that was the case in the opening ceremony with Commons Keith. It's like, we're here for the love of the game. Want to play. Want to beat America. And Americans said, we'll take the money. $500,000 each. $300,000 of which is guaranteed to charity. That's the agreement. Now, I don't know who can ever prove that, but that's the agreement. So their captain, Keegan Bradley, said, I'll give all of my money to charity. And Patrick Cantley has come out, Keith, and said he'll do the same. Now, Cantley, it's funny enough, ironic, you could say, because 2 years ago in Rome, Patrick Cantley was one of the leaders of We Should Get Paid Brigade and didn't wear his Team USA hat in a silent protest. He claimed it didn't fit his head, but we all knew what he was doing. Now he's got his money, he's giving it to charity. All he wants to do is help charity out the whole time.
Yeah, there'll be a domino effect, isn't there? There'll be some American there that probably needs the $500,000 and thinks, well, everybody else is giving it to charity, I'll have to. But yeah, it just doesn't sit right, does it? It seems like some things should be a little bit more than money when you speak about international football or, you know, any sort of international tournament. Very rarely will money come up in America against Europe. You're thinking international platform. But yeah, I don't know. I think it just leaves a bad taste in the mouth of the Americans. But yeah. I think the Europeans are looking at it and thinking, we have more heart and more team spirit and togetherness because you need money.
That's what they'll use it. But recent history would suggest that the home team wins this in a dominant fashion. Like, it's been 13 years.
Yeah, but I was watching the stuff on Sky Sports and they were showing, you know, the European setup when they get there, and it looks like a home away from home. And part of me was looking at it thinking, is it really an away fixture if it's going to be that comfortable for Europe? So I don't know whether you can look at it. I know it's going to be hostile when they get out on the fourth tee and the Americans are there and then, you know, it's like football chant, and it will obviously be hostile. I mean, I struggle with a quiet tee shot, never mind a noisy tee shot. But
do you play?
I do, but I'm poor. I play for the social aspect, and I'm cack-handed and everything, but I enjoy it. And people are, whenever I get out on the golf course, people, you should hold it properly, Keith. You should do this with your feet. I'm like, I'm not here to improve. I'm just here for the social side of it and to enjoy myself.
I'm going to get better at this.
I could shoot 100 or I could shoot a 70. Either way, I walk around with a smile on my face. It's just about getting out for a while.
It's like, imagine if a footballer turned to become a golfer. Like, you know, Gareth Bale is trying it out a bit. Lee Sharp as well was another one who tried to make it on the tour. It must be a difficult transition to go from team sport to what is, you know, caddy aside, essentially an individual one. And I wonder, is it the same for these golfers, you know, playing for themselves the whole time and then they have to play in this team dynamic?
Yeah.
That's probably the interesting aspect. For you as well, particularly, it was like, I'd imagine that you would be really comfortable in this environment because it's a team game. But at the same time, it's derived from a load of people who are individualistic and they have to be selfish.
Yeah, and it's like, obviously the Europeans will have history with each other, as will the Americans, as they will with each other. But as a footballer that's been in a team sport, people have come into teams that I've played for, that I've played against, and when you come into the dressing room, there is a little bit of an overlap, and you think, remember that tackle he put in on me a couple of weeks ago, and it does just linger. But you've got to put it to one side, and I do genuinely think the Europeans are better at doing that and squashing any sort of beef that may be lingering in the background, whereas the Americans, it seems like it's just always there on the periphery, and if you scratch the surface with the Americans, then everything becomes a little bit tetchy. But they've got to be red hot favourites being at home, surely.
Yeah. Do you think international footballers should get paid?
Do you do? When I was playing for Ireland, we did get paid, but it's not a pay, it's more of a match fee. So I think it was $2,000 or $2,500 per game. You get a check.
Is that a flat rate for everyone?
I think so, yeah. I can't imagine I was one of the big hitters getting paid more than anybody else. I think it was just a flat rate for everybody. I actually never cashed the check from the FEI, I just passed them on to my mother and father. But yeah, it was $2,000. $2,000 a game was your match fee, and you get a check at the end of the week from the FEI.
Thought you were doing it for the love of the game.
A lot of the big hitters, I believe, and I'm fairly sure I'm not talking out of school here, I think Robbie Keane gave it to charity. He never made any, you know, big fuss about it, but I believe some of the bigger hitters just gave it straight to charity. And I basically did. I gave it to my man and dad, which, you know, charity starts at home.
That's your Arathis committee answer there in a few years' time. Yeah.
Well, the money was just resting in my bank account.
Resting there, yeah. So 12:10 this afternoon, Irish time, lunchtime. That's the first foursome out. So it's Bryson DeChambeau and Justin Thomas against John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton. So we'll have way more on the Ryder Cup with John Duggan later on in the show. Everything you need to know about it, basically. So there's been a football last night, the Europa League. 25th of September. That's how long Aston Villa had to wait to score a goal at Villa Park this season. John McGinn got it though. Lovely strike with his left foot. Volley bouncing into the turf. Villa got a penalty in the second half. Won by the substitute, Ollie Watkins, who then subsequently missed it. Blaney then hit the bar afterwards. But this is a flat Villa.
Yeah, very flat Villa. I do worry for Unai Emery moving forward, and not the fact that I think Aston Villa might, you know, pull the trigger and sack him. I think he might just get a little bit of a pain in the neck there, because he's done so well last season. You've got to remember when he took over from Steven Gerrard, they were flirting with the relegation zone. He picked them up, brought them on. It just seems like a couple of players' heads have been turned. Watkins doesn't look like the same player all of a sudden. Ramsey doesn't quite look the same. There's a lot of players you look at and you think, I'm not quite sure anymore about these Aston Villa players. Mm. And where you're looking at them thinking, they could easily jump on the back of a Champions League race. Doesn't look like that anymore. And look, they're probably looking at the Europa League thinking we could go deep in that, which they could, but I do feel their Premier League campaign will suffer. I don't think they have the squad strength to go and compete on all fronts. I think it's, they've got to pick and choose their games, Aston Villa.
They still are at a certain level. As we're looking there at Bologna so far in Serie A this season, they've played 4-1-2, lost 2. So they've had a better record so far than Aston Villa comparatively. So they're at a base level of quality still, but gone is the excitement levels under Emery, which this time last year were fairly apparent. And it's virtually the same squad. That's the thing about Villa. They haven't changed that much in the last few years. They're back to where they were when Emery took over.
Yeah, that's probably the best way of putting it. They look to me to have stood still in the transfer market. I know there's a little bit of turnover here and there. They brought Malin in last season, but you're looking at the team that started last night. There's not an awful lot of new faces in there, and you know you need new faces. When you look at Liverpool, who won the Premier League and pretty much won it at a canter at the end of the season, nobody was breathing down their neck. They go and spend millions upon millions to improve the squad, whereas Aston Villa done really well comparatively speaking last season. But they haven't really invested in the squad, and they feel like they've stood still. And with this Premier League and you know how strong it is, if you stand still in the transfer market, you're going backwards.
How is Russell Martinson the job? So Rangers 0, Genk 1. So Rangers went down to 10 men in this game. 4 minutes before halftime, Mohamed Diamande sent off. Subsequent penalty, Genk miss. Bit of a team of the night. But they get the winner 10 minutes into the second half. Hyung-Yu, who of course used to play for Celtic. Further dagger into the hearts there, the fans. Ali McCoy's last night was saying it's very difficult for Russell Martin to continue. And this is Ali McCoy, one of the more jovial figures in football, saying there's a flatness about Rangers, an apathy, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well. It's kind of amazing that he's still in charge. I looked at the Scottish Premiership table. It's only 5 games played, bear in mind. They're 11th of 12. They've drawn 4 and lost 1. This is remarkable in modern history of Rangers.
Way off the pace of Celtic as well in the early doors. I've come across Russell Martin a couple of times in my career, and he's a peculiar character, I would say. When you look what he did at Southampton, and you know, constantly playing out from the back, constantly getting caught, constantly conceding goals, but doubling down. Well, this is what we do. This is the way we play, and it really wasn't the right thing for Southampton. And look, you could argue the same with Vincent Kompany at Burnley, but he goes on to get the Bayern Munich job. How he ended up getting the Rangers job, given how poorly he did at Southampton, I'm not too sure, but I did think, well, that's a platform for Russell to kick on. But again, he seems to be going down the same road. He fell out with a lot of players within the Rangers dressing room. I know Raskin he fell out with. He brought him back in, so he's slapping people on the wrist. He's having to bring them back in. I know when they're coming back from away games and arriving back at Ibrox, there's all sorts of banners out saying get rid of him or the stadium's going to be empty. You don't really see managers turning around when things get as toxic as that. So I wish him all the best, but I think it's just a matter of time, really, isn't it? I mean, the Rangers have got to go really, really deep in Europe, and they've got to be really close to Celtic at the end of the season, if not the other side, and on which I really don't see happening.
What's peculiar about the boy, Russell Martin?
Just the way he goes on, the way he went on. Look, I'm talking about him as a player. When I played against him, he was the right back for Norwich, and I would have been playing left wing where for pressing, and he was one of the right backs that liked to have a, I would say liked to have a chat, but he's just so chirpy, always in your ear, always had something to say. And even if you, even if I ran past him and skinned him, he would still have something to say, like, Russell, mate, you're not coming out on top of this battle. But he's just very, very chirpy, very, very talkative, and yeah, wouldn't have been my kettle of fish on the pitch.
Did you say anything back to him?
Plenty. little bits and bobs. I generally tried to let me football do the talking, but he was a wind-up artist, and he would get you to have a little bite every now and then.
There's plenty of hipster fixtures elsewhere in Europe last night, but I'll bring you this one, right? Lyon 2, Bran 1. Why am I telling you that? Sorry, Lille. Lille 2, Bran 1. Why is that significant? Because the match winner in the 80th minute was scored by one Olivier Giroud, who is now the oldest scorer in Europa League history. 4 days shy of his 39th birthday. Big shout out to Olivier Giroud there for getting the winner for Lille against Bran.
You know, actually, by the way, remember you hit the Keith Friday stuff when we were talking about underrated players?
Yeah.
Olivier Giroud is up there. Isn't he? He's outscored Thierry Henry. I think he's the all-time leading French goal scorer. Done really well for Arsenal. Done okay for Chelsea. Yet when people think of Olivier Giroud, you think, a bit of a static target, man, and not really that good.
Have we not settled that he's good? Has the world not been like, I know he's good, right?
I still think he's underrated. I remember that scorpion kick he scored.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if that was somebody else, people have been doing backflips.
He's good. That was scored the same day. Henrik Mkhitaryan did the same thing for United, and they were deciding what was the better one.
I think he's probably a little bit underrated. You know
what? You're saying he's underrated. What about his goals for France? He's 137 caps.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
57 goals in total.
When you think of the power France have up front, for it to be getting 137 caps, you've got to be a special player.
I know, there's something about him, right? Because when he went to Los Angeles FC, I thought that's the last you're going to see of Giroud in this continent. Yeah. He's back with Lille. Got the winner last night in the Europa League. Fair play to him. Closer to home, the League of Ireland Premier Division tonight, 4 games. So the title could be decided tonight, Keith. Shamrock Rovers entertain Bulls. If they win that game, and then Derry City lose away to Drogheda United, which is feasible, Stephen Bradley will be celebrating another title win. Elsewhere, Galway play Cork and Shells against Waterford, but all eyes on Talla.
Yeah, all eyes on Talla. I think Galway and Cork is a really important game as well. So top of the table, people will have their eyes on, and the bottom, and obviously the European race as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if Bowers go and beat Shamrock Rovers, and then Derry go and lose to Drogheda. It's just been that sort of topsy turvy type of league again this season. Nobody seems to be able to take any sort of advantage when Shamrock Rovers do slip up. On the rare occasion they do slip up, and I think if you're Annan Reynolds and Bowers, you're thinking, we're capable. We've already beaten Shamrock Rovers 3 times this season. Why aren't we top of the league? And it's just that little bit of consistency, but you're probably looking at second all the way down to seventh and saying the word consistency, and that's the reason that people can't catch Shamrock Rovers. But you look at what Stephen Bradley is doing, and you know everything that's going on in the background there, it's an unbelievable job from him.
If you're not a fan of, say, like Shamrock Rovers and probably like the bottom two or three at the moment, you're like, oh, it's a bit of a flat season and it feels like it's petering out. But next week, people will be woken up again because of the Conference League. So it's Shells and Rovers in the group stages. That's going to be class for Irish football fans deep into winter to have two.
Yeah, can't wait. It's brilliant. You know, again, it's the recent history. You look back and you think 18 months ago, if I'd have said to you two League of Ireland teams are going to be playing group stage football in Europe, you'd have probably looked at me and thought, you're a bit mental. Yeah. But it's a reality now. Now we're thinking, well, Shamrock Rovers are literally going to do it every single year, and we're trying to get somebody to do with it. So the league is going from strength to strength. It's great to be a little bit of a part of it. I came back in 2015, and some of the pitches I was playing on, some of the attendances you're looking at, and you're thinking, oh my God, the league is not where it needs to be, but it's got stronger and stronger on the pitch. There's still work to be done off it, a lot of work to be done off it, but it's going in the right direction.
For sure, that's tonight. There's also another game tomorrow. Sligo against Pats is tomorrow. And then Premier League, just standout fixtures there for the weekend. Tomorrow, lunchtime, Keith Andrews' Brentford play Manchester United. Man City play Burnley. Palace against Liverpool is tomorrow at 3 as well. That's a good 3 o'clock game. And then on Sunday, Newcastle play Arsenal, and then check out Monday night's game at the Hill Dickinson. Everton play West Ham. That could very well be Graham Potter's last game in charge of West Ham, the way that's going.
I'm just saying that a couple of weeks now.
I know. Himself and Russell Martin, great agent, whatever they're doing there. So you said Keith Friday, you mentioned it yourself. Where do we pick it up from last week here? So we did one category, and then I was saying, well, who do you appreciate that's kind of a bit underappreciated in the world of football? But you decided to go the cynical negative route and say these are the people who think are massively overrated. We can be a bit more positive there in the day that Team Europe play America. Who are these players that, Keith, that you love? Just the, a player that you love that you don't feel quite gets the recognition.
Did we not do that, the underrated players last...
You know, you didn't overrate.
I don't underrate as well. I don't... Callum Davidson, Stephen Warnock, a lot of the left-backs, and Michael Gray.
Michael Gray, Blackburn.
He went on to be my agent after a little while, but yeah.
He looks like an agent.
Yeah,
well, he's the jawline.
There's a little bit. Mick had an unbelievable body. I remember just watching him doing. He was doing wide arm chin ups and just looking at his back and thinking, "My God, the muscles on this fella." But Michael Gray was an absolute hell of a player. Obviously, an English international, played for Sunderland. But yeah, he became my agent. He came in to me and said, "Look, Keith, I think you're a decent player. I'm going off to do my agency badges, and when I reach the bar, I'd like to be your agent." I said, "Yeah, no problem." But yeah, no, I had a lot of time for Mickey, obviously playing left back behind me. He taught me a lot of the dark arts and where they needed to be at the right places, and yeah, good player for me.
My God, the muscles on this guy. I hope he represents me someday.
I tell you, unbelievable.
Who's your footballer?
I don't know, you go. I have to think about it. It's
I thought you gave
perspective.
Me one.
It's a different perspective. It's a week on.
Oh, you changed your mind on this guy?
I think he was
a bit overrated, if I think about it.
It's just, it's very hard.
You've the Chaps Greyhound style.
It's a very hard one to kind of, it's a very hard one to pick. That's I don't have the hard. Insight he's offering.
Well, I'm not looking for that ex-professional insight. I'm looking for the OD insight.
Well, what's yours?
Do you want to work off mine?
Yeah. Give me a
Do you know who mine is?
We're playing it. Don't say Keith.
No.
Don't be that kind of...
Come on.
Don't be that good.
You were perfectly rated. You're just fine. David Bentley.
Underrated?
Yeah, underrated.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just, you're just picking your favourite footballer.
Underrated, yeah.
Why was he underrated?
Why are you getting annoyed at this?
Why was he underrated? It's so predictable.
Give me an answer.
Give me an answer. But what do you mean? Why is he underrated?
You see, he'd rather judge the answer than give an answer. He said a lot.
Why is he underrated?
I think we've kind of... We don't talk enough about just how good his technique was.
Compared to what?
What do you mean compared to what? Compared to football. Footballers. Like, unbelievable. Do you know why, as well? He started off as a number 10 playmaker century, right? And then found himself unknown at Norwich and was like, well, they play 4-4-2 and they don't play a playmaker, so I'm going to have to change my game. And Nigel Worthington is shunting me out to the right wing. I don't have any pace, so what am I going to do? So what he decided to do was, like, he looked around who's playing the right side of midfield in the Premier League. David Beckham. And he was like, well, I'll just play like Beckham. So he was good enough to get a career of himself by essentially imitating another player without playing his own game. I mean, this guy's technique on his right foot, he got an England cap.
Yeah.
Got into the England squad. You're talking like David Bentley, like the highest he achieved was a big money move in the summer of 2008 to Spurs. And that was it, but he still got into the England squad. There was something about his natural ability. He just never took it seriously enough. But there was a period there with Blackburn where it's not just the hat-trick he scores against Manchester United. There's goals in Europe he scores. Volleys from distance, the ease of which he hit a football. I just don't think we talk about him enough in glowing terms because people think he's a waster. People think he's wasted. He retired at 29. So what did David Bentley achieve? As a footballer, I think he's underrated.
But, like, that's a very strange one, like, because it's not... I'm not slagging him off. But I was looking, like... Just over 250 games. Like, that's nothing, like, in the grand scheme of things, for what you're... Like, it's not a lot of games in terms of...
From what we saw, I mean, like, I never go by the whole longevity argument, personally speaking, right? Because, like, there are some greats at clubs who aren't there that long.
Yeah.
You know, like, Klinsmann at Spurs was a season and all that.
I think
5 years United.
He was a World Cup winner.
Huh?
He was a World Cup winner.
Yeah, but he wasn't there that long to make a name for himself, a legend of the club. I don't think it's the time you have, it's what you do with your time.
Nobody's talking about Jurgen Klinsmann first through a Spurs lens.
Oh, Spurs fans will hold him in the highest of esteem.
Might, but like,
he came back
that's not where he's defined, so
he has one season at Spurs, he's amazing. Then he comes back years later, 97-98, when they nearly get relegated, to help them out again. So he's not, his actual time at the club is tiny in the grand scheme of things.
But he was a huge part
of their history.
He was a great player.
Yeah, he was a great player.
Yeah, but there's no one underappreciating Jurgen Klinsmann.
Yeah, but your argument to me was 250, not many games to be underappreciated. But that's
of
my point.
Of a career.
So he didn't play an awful lot at a certain club, but they hold him in the highest of esteem. So I don't think like, oh, he only played 250 games, so therefore he can't qualify for that category. I personally disagree with that take.
Okay.
You know? We're possibly at an impasse here, and that's fine. That's the beauty of it. Life's about opinions.
Freedom.
Will you give me your opinion, though?
I find that one strange. I find that you'll be telling me next. Oh, Ravel Morrison, really underrated.
Well, you'll be working for what a player. You know what a player he was. You know what a player.
Who's the other fella from the 70s?
Oh, Robin Friday.
Robin Friday.
You forward of Mavericks, yeah? No, come on, give me, come on.
I was trying to think. I took it very seriously when you asked.
Yeah, but now you're not then.
No, I had to think.
Robbie Savage rang David Bentley in the dressing room.
I know. Yeah, I know that one.
Give him his England call up and done the Capello.
McLaren.
Oh, sorry, McLaren. Yeah, not Capello. Done the McLaren. Yeah, McLaren would be a little bit easier to do, wouldn't it, for a Welsh boy? But yeah, I was in the dressing room when he did it. It was absolutely hilarious. And Benz,
oh, were you?
Yeah,
were you
there? A few of us were. Benz was biting brilliant. And he absolutely loved it. But I had a similar story when Tardelli rang me.
That's that.
Yeah, I wasn't quite as. I thought I was being wound up by one of my mates. He's actually a councillor now, Daniel Ennis. He was a wind-up merchant back in the day. He rang me dad. My dad used to deliver papers back in the day, and he was jumping over one of the railings to throw the papers, and he fell off the railings, and he came back and told me and my brother. Daniel rang him the next morning saying, oh, we've just got CCTV of you falling off the railings. We think you could get a claim. And strung me there on for weeks and weeks thinking he was getting a claim. It was just Daniel winding him up. So when I get a phone call of somebody with really broken English telling me I've been selected to play against Argentina, the opening of the Aviva Stadium, I thought, never played for Ireland before. This call has come totally out of the blue. This is a wind-up. And I told Marco Tardelli to get lost, and then hung up the phone on him. 2 minutes later, Sean St. Ledger rings me and says, Keith, Marco Tardelli rang me, told me you just told him to F off, like. And I had to go back from my tail in between my legs and apologise to him.
Just imagining that Tardelli and St. Ledger are buddies. God, you won't believe I'll keep, man. I just like that. Don't worry about him. I just mean it personally.
Yeah, genuinely thought it was a bogey wind up call. And
what happened? Did he ring you back or did you ring him back?
I rang him back and apologised. I thought he was being wound up, and I don't think he really understood what was going on, but he just, yes, okay, no problem. And yeah, that was the start of my international career.
So I was trying to think
of different things.
But you gave me a name.
I did, no.
So why are you reluctant to say
it's not part? Reluctant. The player I was thinking, because I
love... You love this name.
Kilbane. So I think, I was trying to think, it's like, okay, who did I see? Because I didn't want to be like you, whereas like, how much David Bentley were you watching? Not that much.
So much.
You weren't watching a lot.
Give me a game, I'll tell you how he played.
There wasn't the availability to watch, like,
I watched
Norwich.
I watched every game.
Norwich 0405.
There's another underrated player in the production box, Alan Quinlan.
Weren't watching Norwich 0405. You couldn't see it. You wouldn't have been able to see it. You're not on my road.
I used to watch so much Norwich.
Who was the Norwich striker that was a legend?
I was literally just thinking the same. Dean Ashton.
No. Darren Huckabee.
Coventry and Norwich.
Yeah, when I think of Norwich, I think of Huckabee.
A bit underrated, Darren Huckabee. Some of the goals he's scored from Coventry. Yeah. So Kevin Kilbane, he does a very, very healthy chance that Kev is listening this morning.
Kevin's Kilbane.
No, he's not listening. No, he wouldn't be listening. He's not going to be up.
I get the odd text about what's happening.
No, I was just trying to think of players I'd seen a lot of. So I'd seen an awful... You'd have seen every Ireland game then. And then whatever you kind of see at the Premier League.
Yeah, okay, go on.
And I was trying to remember looking when you were watching him play.
Yeah.
And he was so extremely good at all those kind of basic things of what he had to do on that left wing. So it's obviously such a different game. Mm-hmm. But like he just was so relentless. And it's just that kind of thing where it's in the moment, because there was kind of players you'd probably more celebrated in there, obviously. Mm. But just thinking back, watching him, he was so reliable.
I think what happened with Kev Kilbane, I'm kind of reluctant to say all this because I know there's a relationship between listening and all that. But when he first broke through, my memory of Kev was like, not quite a wunderkind, but it was like, this guy's unbelievable on the left wing, right? Because he'll tear fullbacks apart. Yeah. Unbelievable, direct, technique was great, up and down engine. But then I think the perception of Kev Kilbane was that he became like the ultimate team player and moved back into left back.
Yeah.
And I think the term like, oh, he'll do a job for you started being associated for Kev. Mm. And maybe the actual technical aspect of his game wasn't championed as much as it had been when he first broke through. There was a kind of well, he's very reliable and you'll have him in your team, which probably did under-celebrate what type of a footballer he was. Like, he was better than that description.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I think Killer was an unbelievable player. Very, very technically sound. For anybody that can play left wing and then slot into left back and look as comfortable as he did in 1v1 situations, I think he might have even played a couple of games in a centre midfielder and maybe one or two a centre half.
Was it Kilbane and Roy Keane played against France in midfield in Paris?
Possibly, yeah.
I have a vague recollection of that.
There's only one memory jumping out at me of that game. The Henri handball, is that the one?
No, this is the Brian Kerr, Roy Keane era.
Oh, right. Yeah. But look, I what do you get? Over 100 caps for Ireland, the Centurion for Ireland. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Real nice guy as well. Nobody ever has a bad word to say about him in football.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
He's all a right, unit.
Standard answer
a
there.
A unit. Enough. As the, I put some compassion, you've just watched Under the Cosh. No. It's the first thing that comes to mind.
Oh, whoa. I have a David Bentley pat too. All right, here bag. We have a few other suggestions. Now, this is going out of hand, right? I got a message here saying we got to get Keith naming his top three stadiums that he played in. But we'll have to do that next week because there's two other things we want to do today, right? We did a fashion show last week and it was so popular that the people demanded you do it again. So you brought more for us.
I brought more.
Yeah. Bear with us there, Keith. Can't
start with me football boots, will I?
Yeah.
I'm not going to... I managed to get KT11 on these. I've no recollection of... These are my last boots, so I imagine I was playing for Barnsley in these.
I thought you were number 11 at Preston.
I was, but I kept it all the way. Even though I was number 26, I said, I'm just sticking with 11 anyway, so... KT11 on my boots, even though I 26 on my back. And a little Ireland flag, but yeah, I used to get the longest studs you were allowed. I'm not sure, I think they were like a size 14 or something the studs were, but they were the longest ones permitted to try and jab them into somebody's foot as I went past. Well, they were my last boots, but they're the only ones I have. I searched high and low, and my nephew Lee had these, so...
Do you have both boots at home?
Both of them, yeah.
Both of them?
Yeah.
They'd fit you?
Yeah.
I asked you for a game of ball now, you'd be able to play away.
Yeah, but they're a little bit. They might need an hour in there. Bit of hot water, but
we were talking about them last week, the two of us and Barry Murphy, about, you know, Predators and Vapors and all that. So they're Adidas, but what are they?
I think they are Predator, some sort of Adidas Predator, but like the amount of boots that just end up arriving to the training ground, you know, week after week, day after day, you don't really keep track.
Do you have a boot sponsor?
Yeah.
So how does it work? So Adidas, for example, we have a load of gear here for Keith, send it on to him. And it's in your place in the dressing room, and then you just open it up and
comes in
boots.
A big, huge cardboard box. That's Key Tracy Adidas, and you bring it into the dressing room. It's the worst thing you can do. Never open your supply drops in the dressing room.
What happens?
The vultures come. The ones who don't have it just start picking and taking everything. Before you know it, you're left with like three pairs of shorts. Masseurs start coming in, going, "Oh, you like that as well?" But it's great because he sells you golf gear as well. He sends you all the golf gear, sends you all the little tops and all for playing. Yeah, it's brilliant. When I first went over, I had like a real loose relationship with Nike where they'd send me stuff but I wasn't getting paid. And then later on I became with Adidas and there was very, very little money but all the gear I could want. And then towards the end Puma wanted me, but I wasn't never mad about Puma boots, so I wasn't into it.
You turned them down?
Yeah. I was looking at David Bentley running around in his and thought, they're not for me, them Pumas.
Because of the way he was running with them?
No, the ones that he was wearing had like a little flick on the toe. Oh. The big toe was big and I just thought, crossing, they're not
for
me.
So when you turned down Puma, did you have an alternative?
Don't get me wrong, they went banging on my door with a big huge contract saying, Keith, please. It was like, would you be interested? I'm not really, no.
We want you to be the face of our global advertising campaign.
I tore down the face of your pony.
I don't like the look of him. All right, fair enough. There's another bit though, this is the big one here. So Keith sent me this on WhatsApp during the week and I was like, no way. For people who can't see, because there are only listeners out there, what do you got?
This is the Robbie Keane Liverpool jersey from 2008.
Oh, it must have been, because he was only there a week, wasn't he?
Yeah, this is it's surprisingly small, but Robbie's not the biggest fella in the world anyway. But it's crazy to look back on these sort of things. I remember the day we got beat 3-1 by Liverpool. And I was warming up, I got sent out to warm up and... me and Benny McCarthy were warming up, and as Robbie Keane came out to warm up for Liverpool, he stopped and gave Benny a bit of a hug and a high five. And when he ran on, he said to Benny, do you know Robbie? He said, yeah, I know him from such and such. I said, oh, you wouldn't get me the jersey, would you? And thankfully Benny came across with the jersey.
Class.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. But even like looking back when you had Pepe Reina was in goal.
Yeah.
Carragher, Hoopie, Yossi Benayoun on one wing, Xavi Alonso, Steven Gerrard. It was a really, really good Liverpool team. Probably Benitez's best Liverpool team, but yeah, we were right in it. They scored. I think Xavi Alonso scored in around the 70th minute.
Mm-hmm.
Then Yossi Benayoun scored. Santa Cruz pulled one back. And then I think I come on and Gerrard put us to the sword and we ended up losing 3-1. Come on and win it for us, Keith.
Yeah, this is the 6th of December 2008, Ewood Park. Blackburn won, Liverpool 3.
But the Premier League was such a different animal. Like I was looking at the table back then and I think Blackburn were 14th, Manchester City were 10th, Wigan were 11th, Bolton were 13th and Portsmouth were 14th.
But they all are good serious players.
They were strong Premier League teams at the time.
Yeah, Portsmouth had just won the FA Cup. Yeah,
That would have been Harry, would it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what's a fun fact about this game?
Go on.
You came on, but Robbie didn't.
You told me that outside and I've very little recollection of it. I come on in like the 90th minute, was it?
Yeah, well, I told you came on, but I didn't realise that Robbie didn't come on until now and I'm looking at the notes again. So you came on in the 90th minute for Matt Derbyshire. Remember him when he was briefly hydrated? Yeah. Didn't he go abroad when fellas weren't going abroad that much? He went to Olympiacos or something.
Yeah, Blackburn. Yeah, married to an Irish girl as well. Derbs, right. Yeah.
A hell of a Blackburn team, like for your Premier League vintage people out there. The names roll off the tongue, like Robinson and goal. Ouyer, right back.
Andre Ouyer, what a player, Dutch international.
Samba and Nelson at the back, that's strong. Strong centre halves there.
Not to be messed with them. Yeah. Too,
your boy Warnock on the left.
Yeah.
Your other boy, Brett Emberton. Keith Andrews, centre mid, alongside two guy. Martin Gamst, Rocky Santa Cruz, Derbyshire, they're all there. Unbelievable. And you came out in the 90th, you're one of three subs to come on. You, Benny McCarthy and Vogel.
Johan Vogel.
Who you said is some character.
Absolute character, yeah. Swiss boy, Swiss international. When he came in, he was... I remember looking at him thinking he's so real neat and tidy, very, very rarely loses the ball.
Yeah.
And you expected him to be a little bit the same when he came off the pitch, but his personality was brilliant, absolutely hilarious. So I spent a lot of time with Johan in the gym and doing rehab and stuff like that. Really, really funny boy.
Class. Did you pick up any other languages when you were with all these players? Did everyone do English?
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah, you mentioned some Liverpool players. Reina, Carragher, Hoopie, Alonso, Gerrard, Mascherano.
Yeah.
Side. This is the one. This is the Liverpool side that should have won the league. Actually, is this the one? They beat United at Old Trafford 4-1, and Daniel De Senna scored. Is this the fax year with Rafa?
Benitez. Great question.
I think it is, you know, on the press conference, you know, these are facts.
Yeah, I'm getting a flashback.
That's about a month later, I'd say. So Robbie leaves the next month. He goes back to Spurs.
Robbie Keane.
Yeah, so that's how short it was, his time at Liverpool.
Robbie Fowler was on the bench.
On the bench, not used. But yeah, so how did you didn't just go up to Robbie, did you, and ask for the jersey?
No, Benny. Benny was the go-between because I hadn't played for Ireland at this point. I'd never met Robbie Keane before. Like, what age had I been? Probably 19, looking at Ireland's top ever goal scorer, I think, and I can't talk to him. So I was a little bit more comfortable with Benny. I'd been to a Pussycat Dolls concert with Benny, believe it or not.
I was a little bit
comfortable. And
No further questions, because see that happened.
Neo was the warm-up. That was the main reason I went.
Neo,
yeah. Remember him?
Give us a belt.
I'm so sick of love songs. Closer.
Yeah, but give us some songs.
No, I'm not going to sing. Come on, Jesus.
Robbie Fowler, what was he like?
Robbie was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I thought he was hilarious when he first came in. Him and Paul Ince brought him in, and he was on a pay-as-you-play deal because he wasn't that fit. He was obviously coming towards the end of his career. But absolutely brilliant to get little snippets from him. The way he finished with his back to goal, just picking out corners all the time. He never seemed to shoot.
It's always it was composed finish, wasn't it?
Like, but that's it. Like, people snapping at his ankles, Samba trying to get through him, and he'd just be passing balls into the corners and... Yeah, when you've got a DVD of Fowler's top 100 goals in the Premier League, you know you're not bad.
Just got the winding up gesture, just as we were getting going.
Oh.
So next week, you're back and we'll have to do stadiums and we got to do games. Favourite games, because I could talk about favourite games forever.
But
let us know in the meantime, YouTube or WhatsApp, what your favourite games in history. Don't have to be the best games, not Istanbul or anything, if you want, that's fine. Games that mean something to you. We'll talk about that next week. In the meantime, lads, OTP Breakfast, UPMC, Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.